Speaking on this program is Brother James Watkins.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. It is a genuine joy to be in your presence at this moment. It is a joy and privilege to share the good news of human redemption, to talk of matters that have to do with our eternal welfare. And the Bible also deals with those simple affairs of daily living that provides for us a happiness and a fullness, a genuine deep-seated satisfaction, even in this old world. And so we're hopeful that what we say will in some way influence you for good, maybe give you fodder, as it were, for future study, give you some time to think about matters that are eternally significant. You know, I heard the other day that more than half the marriages in the United States are breaking up. More than half the homes are being torn asunder. That's tragic news, beyond our ability even to imagine or certainly to appreciate. What is the problem in America today? Let's talk a little bit about the ingredients of that home and understand that God provided it for man's happiness, his welfare, his productivity. You recall, of course, Genesis 2, verse 7, Jehovah God formed man of the dust of the earth, breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Now, you're also aware of the fact that God said almost immediately that it's not good that the man should be alone. I'll make him a help meet for him, M-E-E-T, one answering to his needs. Now, that's an interesting thought, one who answers to the needs of man. And we've talked of this, but when you think about it, what are the basic needs of man? You recall, of course, in Genesis 1, 26 and 27, God having created the earth and everything in it for man's welfare, finally said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the beasts of the field, the birds of the heavens, over the fish of the sea, over all cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." And Jehovah God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. Now, we've noticed, of course, many times that God is a spirit. John 4:24. Spirit does not have flesh and bone, verse 39, Luke chapter 24. So we don't look like God, no. We are made in his image and his likeness. So when we come back to Genesis 2 at verse 7, and Jehovah God formed man of the dust of the earth, breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, man became a living soul. God said, it's not good that the man should be alone. I'll make him a help answering to his needs. What were man's needs, essentially? Well, when you really stop to think about it, John tells us, you remember, 1 John 4, verse 8, that God is love. So love must have an object. We're made in the image and the likeness of God. That's correct. Adam needed someone for whom he could be responsible, someone whose welfare he could provide for, someone who would reciprocate the love that he exhibited toward her. That was the need of Adam. If we aren't careful, we get the idea he needs a slave or he needs someone to do. No. He needs someone who can share his life and thus provide for his fullness, his happiness, and his well-being. Oh, and it's interesting that God created the lower forms of animal life, brought them before Adam to see what he would call them, and whatsoever the man called each one, that was the name thereof. However, it says, but among all these, there was not found a help meet for Adam. Why, certainly not. We're made in the image and the likeness of God. We are not a part of the lower form of animal life. Many people seemingly have difficulty distinguishing between man, made in the image and the likeness of God, and the lower forms of animal life that were put here for man's welfare. None of these met Adam's need. So God caused a deep sleep to come upon Adam, and while he slept, he opened his side, took a rib therefrom, and of the rib he made the woman. and gave her to be with the man. Adam then said, "This is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. Therefore she shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man." And God said, "For this cause shall a man leave his father and his mother, cleave unto his wife, and they two shall become one flesh." Through verse 24, Genesis chapter 2. So God provided the matter of marriage, the relationship of husband and wife, for our fullness, our happiness, our genuine joy, the sharing of our love and our concern, one for whom we could be responsible. And that is so important. You know, when God put Adam and Eve in beautiful Eden, a state of perfection, everything essential to man's happiness and well-being was available. But God said to Adam, "Dress and keep the garden." And sometimes if we aren't careful, we say, "Well, there had to be a catch to it. He has a job now and he's assigned a friend." That's not a catch. That is essential to your happiness, your fullness, and your contentment of heart and mind. You take a responsible human being who has no obligation or responsibility, the most miserable creature on earth. There has to be a purpose in life. So as Adam walked through the garden, he could look to see what needed pruning or what should be done. Responsibility is essential. Just as God provided beautiful Eve to be the wife of Adam for his fullness and his happiness. What about this thing, though, of the husband? You know, that's an interesting thought, isn't it? Where did that term husband come from? Well, it's from two root words, actually. House band. The husband, sure, he circumscribes the home, the house. He provides for it, both by way of example and then with regard to material needs. The husband is responsible for the welfare of the home. As a matter of fact, he is the head of the home. I think we understand that Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, you remember at verse 3, "But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God." Here is the order of rank or authority. Now, God and Christ gave up equality with the Father to take upon himself flesh and blood so that he could redeem my soul. But returning to the Father, he and the Father are immortal, they are eternal. And so when God created man, he created the male first and then the female. The head of the woman is the man. That's by way of rank or creation, and in one sense of the term, authority. Now, if we're not careful with a closed mind and maybe an overinflated ego, we get the idea that, well, now you're putting the woman down. No, that has nothing to do with that kind of thing. No. The husband is the head of the wife. He is thus the head of the home. What are you saying, preacher? Oh, he not only circumscribes, he oversees, and he undergirds. The husband is responsible for the welfare of the home in every sense of the term, both in the spiritual and the material realm. We understand that. Husband is the head of the wife. I remember in Genesis chapter 3, verse 16, God said to Mother Eve after the transgression in Eden, he said, "I'll greatly multiply thy pain and thy conception. In pain shalt thou bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee." Now, sometimes people take that to be a punishment. What God is saying, your husband will rule over you because you deserve this kind. No, that's for the security of the woman. That's to provide for her happiness. That is to give her assurance and safety. That's what the marriage relationship is all about. No. Marriage is not a master-slave relationship. Why, certainly not. What was it Jesus said in Matthew 19, verse 4? Have you not read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female? And said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and his mother, shall cleave unto his wife, and they two shall become one flesh, so that they are no more two, but one flesh. That's an interesting thing about marriage, isn't it? That's what I need. Oh, that's why God created the woman. Thus, in this sacred relationship of marriage, both husband and wife are happier than they would be in any other relationship of life. This is why God made us. And this is the arrangement that he provided for our happiness and for our welfare. So the husband is the head of the wife. Isn't that what Paul said, Ephesians chapter 5, verse 23? And for the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, being himself the Savior of the body. So then, headship simply means there is a responsibility assigned for the welfare of the home. Many homes today are breaking up. Marriages, of course, ending in the divorce courts, a tragedy beyond description, simply because the husband does not realize his responsibilities. Or maybe I should say, does not recognize the privileges that are his. Oh, and not recognizing those privileges, he is denied the happiness that God provided through the sacred relationship of a scriptural marriage. That's as high as you can go. That is the groundwork for the greatest degree of happiness that man can know. Well, when you think about the husband, you might ask now, what are the duties of the husband? Oh, number one, Ephesians 5, verse 25, husbands, love your wives as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for it. The husband is to love his wife. Right. That's a selfless love. As a matter of fact, that's the basis of marriage in the first place. If you do not love her sufficiently to desire to spend your life making her happy, providing for her welfare, if you do not intend to give yourself to her in the fullest sense of that term, then don't dishonor her by marrying her. Many people fail to understand the basis upon which a happy, lasting, productive marriage may be founded. And that husband is important. Husbands, love your wives as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for it. That's a caring love. That is a sacrificial love. Jesus shed his blood to purchase the church, Acts 20, verse 28. Gave his life, indeed. Why? Because he loved the church. Oh, that's the way marital love is shown. The husband gives himself strength, ability, all of himself, to make his wife happy, to provide for the welfare of the home. Husbands, love your wives. Yeah, that's fundamental. As a matter of fact, he is to appreciate the work that she does. And he needs to relieve her in some of the chores and tasks in managing the home that become drudgery. You see, that's what marriage is all about. It is the showing of one's appreciation for the other. And if we aren't careful, we're making too wide a distinction there. No longer two, but one flesh. That's why Paul said in Ephesians 5 at verse 28, even so ought husbands to love their wives as themselves. No man ever hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as Christ also the church. What is he saying here in Ephesians 5:28? Oh, no longer two, but one flesh. Then I take into consideration her desires, her needs, before I consider my own. However, her desires and her needs fulfilled provide for my happiness, because we're no longer two, but one flesh. Every decision that's made in the sacred relationship of marriage needs to be made in light of each one and the needs of each for the other. That's the way those decisions are made. Oh, and when you thus live your life in genuine love for another that puts her or him first, that provides for happiness. You see, that's the way you're made. You're made in the image and the likeness of God. God created man for companionship. God is a God of love. He needed someone, wanted someone for whom he could be responsible, who could understand and appreciate his love. That's the way we are. That is exactly what we need. Thus, the husband is to love his wife. He is to take into consideration her needs and the responsibilities that she has, and to provide for her happiness and welfare in the progression and development of the home. Ah, friend, that's marriage. That is the way a happy marriage comes about. The husband is to provide for his wife in every way. It's just a wonderful relationship. You know, he is to be worthy of her. There's a little poem. M.V. Caruthers wrote this, if I can read it in this light. He said, "Lord, may there never be a moment in my life when she regrets that she became my wife. Help me to do the utmost that I can to prove myself a measure of her man. Since years must bring to all their load of care, let us together every burden bear. And when death beckons one along its path or its path along, may not the two of us be parted long." Friends, that's what marriage is all about. She is a part of me. We are no longer two, but one flesh. The husband then is to endeavor to be worthy of his wife. Oh, and the husband is to praise his wife. Did you know many marriages are destroyed because of a failure on the part of the husband to recognize the needs of his wife? No, those are not expensive needs. Those are not demanding or great needs. No. These are genuine and they are essential to the happiness and the productivity of the relationship of marriage. You know, we've illustrated a number of times. You can take a woman and put her in a mansion on the hill and give her satin sheets to sleep on and the finest automobile to drive into town on occasion. Give her servants to do the more difficult tasks of the home. But if she knows in her heart that you don't really love her with all of your heart, she's not really happy. You can take that same woman, put her on a hovel with a dirt floor that she sweeps with a brush broom. But if she knows that's the very best you can do, you love her more than you love your own life, friends, she'll sweep her dirt floor with her brush broom with a song in her heart. Women are amazing creatures. God provided them to provide for human happiness, male and female, in the sacred relationship of marriage. So then, we should never allow a day to pass, but what sometime during that day, we take her aside in private and tell her how much she means to us. Oh, I remember that Solomon said, you remember, Proverbs 31, about verse 28, he said, her children rise up and call her blessed, and her husband also. And he praiseth her, saying, many daughters have done worthily, but thou excellest them all. And any husband who loves his wife can make that statement. Many daughters have done worthily. Oh, but you're superior to all of them. Ah, yes, you exceed the highest standards. That's true. When she is the object of your love, when she is the source of your delight, when the marriage is what it ought to be, husbands must, yea, they need to praise their wives if indeed they want a happy relationship in the matter of marriage. so important. And you know, when you think about the husband's responsibilities, head of the house, right, house band, circumscribes, undergirds, oversees, provides financial support for the wife, for the children. And as Paul explained, of course, in 1 Timothy chapter 5, for sick or aged parents. He that provideth not for his own has denied the faith and is become worse than an infidel. That's 1 Timothy chapter 5 at verse 8. So we have a responsibility. And let's remove the word responsibility. We have a privilege as husbands and fathers, as the head of the house, one who provides for the home. We have the privilege of supplying the material needs of those who are the objects of our love. It's a genuine joy. You know, if we aren't careful, sometimes husbands become a little selfish. And they spend on themselves what needs to be used for the welfare of the family. And, of course, that puts a rough edge on the relationship. And the first thing you know, with that kind of an attitude, personal, independent, as if we were separate from all others, and we come first, you're going to destroy the happiness of the home. The home is a unit. Husband and wife, no longer two, but one. And I need a full recognition of that fact. So we supply the material needs of the home. Oh, but more than that, the husband is responsible for the direction, the tutelage, the instruction of the offspring. And that is a tremendous responsibility. And first of all, example is essential. As a matter of fact, your children are very wise. They can spot a hypocrite in 10 seconds. It doesn't take them very long. And so I need to be teaching them what I have been exemplifying in my attitude, my speech, and my daily conduct. Isn't that what the Lord said to ancient Israel and the principle obtains today? Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 through 9. He said, "These words which I command thee this day shall be upon thine heart. Thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. Thou shalt speak of them when thou sittest in thine house, when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, when thou risest up. They shall be for signs upon thine hands. Thou shalt bind them for frontlets between thine eyes. Upon thy gates and upon the doorposts of thine house shalt thou write them." What is he actually saying here in Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 through 9? Oh, he's saying the prime responsibility of parenthood is the instruction of offspring in the love of God and the knowledge of truth. Oh, that's first. That's primary. That's before clothing or food or shelter. We are all of these things we have a responsibility for, and we're happy to supply them. But the point is, they won't need material things very long. But your children will live forever. Friends, I need then to equip them to stand in a right relationship with Him who said, "I'll never fail thee, neither will I in any wise forsake thee." Oh, and this is a prime responsibility of the house band, the husband who oversees and undergirds, who provides for the welfare of his family. That is so important. Now, you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but nurture them in the chastening and the admonition of the Lord. Ephesians 6 at verse 4, is it not? Friends, we have a responsibility to discipline our children. Now, sometimes in today's world where people have forgotten what happiness is all about, they say, "Well, now, we don't discipline our children." That's right, because we don't love them. Proverbs 13, verse 24. "Oh, he that spareth the rod hateth his son. Oh, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes." What are you saying here, Solomon? Oh, those who love their children teach them that violation of law has a penalty. Now, they always do it with love. They always do it with adequate explanation. They want to be sure their children understand that there are certain rules and regulations by which we are to order our lives. When we willfully and deliberately violate these things, then punishment ensues. That's what faithful parenting is all about. That's what the house band is all about. That's what the overseer of the home is all about. He provides for them, not just in a material way, which of course he is responsible for, but primarily for their spiritual welfare. Loving his wife as Christ loved the church. That's what it's all about. Spiritual matters. This is his right. However, many husbands undermine the basis upon which they could have this genuine joy and happiness. When a wife reciprocates the love of her husband in managing that home, it's provided for his happiness and his well-being. And indeed, it is a home in which there is joy, love shared, and of course, that necessitates that home being Christian, walking in the footsteps of Jesus Christ, knowing the happiness and the genuine joy that comes when the heart is focused, centered upon doing God's will. God provided for the marriage. God provides for its happiness and its well-being. I need to hear Him when He speaks. May God help us so to do.